and founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Ananta Koti Vaishnava Ki Jai, Namacharya Srila Haridasa Thakur Ki Jai, Prem Shikaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasudeva Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai, Shri Shri Radha Krishna Prabhu Vinashana Kunda Radha Kunda Ki Jai, Vrindavan Ki Jai, Vrindavan Ki Jai, hopefully at that time we'll get to see Krishna, and if not, we'll chant some more. Okay, Paramakarna, this most merciful Prabhupada, these two persons, Nithai Gaurachandra, Sabha Avatar, all avatars, Sada Shiromani, they are the crown jewel, Kevala Anandakanda. So that's what we're going to talk about today. Kevala Anandakanda. Kevala means only. Ananda means bliss, only happiness. Bajo Bajo Bhai. So please, my dear brothers, Chaitanya Nitai, Churida Bishvasakur, you please have faith in Chaitanya Nitai. Vishaya Charita, and there's one thing though, you have to give up your sense gratification. You have to give up your materialistic way of life. Seira Se Majiya Muke Bolo Hari Hari. If you want to chant with your mouth, Hari Hari with rasa, with taste. Deko Urebai. You please see, my dear brothers, Tribhuvaninai, in the whole three worlds, Emana Dwayala Data, there's nobody as wonderful, as merciful. Pasupaki Jue, the birds and the animals are crying in ecstasy. Pasanavihare, the stones are melting. Sunijara Gunagata, just by hearing of his qualities. Samsare Majaya Rohili Korya, unfortunately, I am pushed down, I'm constricted by the material energy by this samsara. Se pare nahilo asha. I don't take shelter of their lotus feet. Abana karma bunjaya samanaka vailojana dasa. Maybe Yamaraj is punishing me for all of my sinful activities. So we're going to read from Chaitanya Charitamrita Adilila, chapter 7, Lord Chaitanya and Five Features. This chapter was published separately and originally from the whole Chaitanya Charitamrita. Before we got the whole Chaitanya Charitamrita, we got just this section, Adi-7, and then read text 20 to 21. And if you're Bengali, I apologize in advance for butchering the language. Sorry. Se panchatattva mili prithiviyasya. Purva prema bandarera mudra ugadiya. Panche mili lute prema kadaya svadanda. Yata yata piyatrishna bharaya nukshana. vote for you. Nice to see you again after, for me, it's been a very, very long time. Just came back from India?
Yeah.
Maybe so. Transcendental love. Mudra. Seal. Ugadiya. Opening. Panche Mili. Mixing together all these five. Lute. Plunder. Prema. Love of Godhead. Kare Asvadana. Taste. Yata Yata. As much as. Pie. Drink. Krishna, thirst, badhe, increases, anukshana, again and again. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. The characteristics of Krishna are understood to be a storehouse of transcendental love. Although that storehouse of love certainly came with Krishna when he was present, it was sealed. But when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came with his other associates of the Panchatattva, they broke the seal and plundered the storehouse to taste transcendental love of Krishna. The more they tasted it, the more their thirst for it grew. So generally, in the material world, the more you taste something, the more your experience of it lessens. You have something, and it has some taste, and the experience of that taste decreases. Now also your desire for it may increase, but as your desire increases, your satisfaction decreases. You want it more and more, but you get less and less happiness out of it. Whereas prema, Krishna prema, you get full satisfaction, and yet you still want more, both. You don't get satisfied, you say, okay, that's enough. And nor does it become boring. Purport. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is called Mahavaranaya Avatara, because although he is Sri Krishna himself, he is even more favorably disposed to the poor fallen souls than Lord Sri Krishna. When Lord Sri Krishna himself was personally present, he demanded that everyone surrender unto him and promised that he would then give all protection. So what's that verse? Sarvadharman. So in our Gurukula, the children would memorize 48 Bhagavad Gita verses, and that was the last one. And once a week, every week we'd study one verse. But at the end of the week, we'd recite all 48 verses. And we'd say them in Sanskrit and in English. So for that verse, the children would say, they'd say, Sarva dharma vritya jama mekam sharanam vritya ham tam sarva papebhyo moksha ishyami man suchaha. And then they'd say the English, abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender unto me. I shall deliver you from all sinful reaction. Do not fear. So that was a demand. Mame kam sharanam vritya. When Lord Sri Krishna himself was personally present, he demanded that everyone surrender unto him and promised that he would then give one all protection. So first you surrender, then I'll protect you. That's reasonable. Right? But when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to this earth with his associates, he simply distributed transcendental love of God without discrimination. Sri Rupa Goswami, therefore, could understand that Lord Chaitanya was none other than Sri Krishna himself, for no one but the Supreme Personality, Godhead, can distribute confidential love of the Supreme Person. Say, Panchatattva Mili, Prithivi Yashya. Purva Prema Bandera Mudra Ugadiya. Panche Mile Bhute Prema Kare Asvadana. Yata Yata Piye Krishna Vare Anukshana. The characteristics of Krishna are understood to be a storehouse of transcendental love. Although that storehouse of love certainly came with Krishna when he was present, it was sealed. But when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came with his other associates of the Panchatattva, they broke the seal and plundered the storehouse to taste transcendental love of Krishna. The more they tasted it, the more their thirst for it grew. So those of us here in the material world, by definition, are here because we don't like the idea of surrendering to Krishna. It bothers us. And Prabhupada, speaking on Gaur Purnima, I talked about this principle that when we hear Krishna says surrender, we say, why? I mean, if anybody came up to us and said, okay, you have to surrender to me and do whatever I say, what would our immediate reaction be? Why? Who are you? Why should I surrender to you? Why should I listen to you? And this is, in general, we feel that way about the government, we feel that way about our parents, woman feels that way about her husband, one feels that way about one's employer, we feel that way about our temple presidents and GBC, and whoever is in a position of authority over us, we feel like, why should I listen to you? I'll listen to you when I want to, and I won't listen to you when I don't want to. People will go through the scriptures, even religious people, and they'll say, okay, this thing in the scripture I like, and this thing in the scripture I don't like. Even recently I had a conversation with a very intelligent and learned devotee, who was saying, well, you look at Prabhupada's purports, and the parts of Prabhupada's purports that go with the verse, you accept those, and the parts of Prabhupada's purport that don't go with the verse, you can accept them as you want. This is our tendency. Of course, when we first join the Hare Krishna movement, we tend to believe that we fully surrendered. I recently got an email like that from this one girl. I have no more material desires, she said. I've completely surrendered to Krishna. And I said, well, you may notice some material desires later on. No, I'm sure, she said, I have no more material desires. So at first one thinks like that. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur calls that false confidence. That yes, I've surrendered to Krishna. And gradually Krishna starts showing us how really we don't like this idea of surrender. Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati calls Krishna the transcendental autocrat. And as soon as we hear this word autocrat, we think, oh, why? I don't want any autocrat. I was just reading Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati's introduction to a book about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he was talking about service. And he said, in this world, there's the give and take. Now, I'm your friend, and I expect something back from you. There's some reciprocation going on. He said, but the devotee, they say, Krishna, I'll serve you. And if you take my service and then throw me away, that's okay. You can use me however you want. So again, when we hear that kind of thing, we become frightened. I don't want someone to just take my service and throw me away. Or I was reading yesterday a conversation Prabhupada had with a particular disciple. And the conversation has to be understood in the context of this disciple who was very much wanting to do things his own way. But Prabhupada said, surrender doesn't mean even you say, Krishna, I demand to do a particular service. Krishna, I surrender and whatever you want me to do, I will do. Not even just, okay, Krishna, I'll surrender if you give me a lot of money, I'll surrender if you give me a nice family. But not even, Krishna, I'll surrender if you give me this service. I'll surrender to you if I can be a pujari. Otherwise, no, surrender. So these are very scary. Therefore, we don't surrender. And when we see Krishna's pastimes, also Krishna's pastimes seem very scary. Krishna's there dancing with the gopis, but then, you know, he leaves. He plays his flute, he calls them, they come. And they're enjoying together, and then he just leaves. He's just gone. And he's with them in Vrindavan, and then Apura takes him to Mathura, and he says, don't worry, I'm coming right back. And he doesn't. You know, like one of you was saying the other day, Krishna is so kind, but yet he has these pastimes with these rivers of blood, and kind of scary. So I don't know if I want to surrender to Krishna and join Krishna's pastime. We have this hesitancy. And frankly, if you say you don't have this hesitancy, then what are you doing here? This is the place for people who are hesitant to surrender to Krishna, who say, you know, I really don't think I want to do that. So therefore, Krishna, he's coming, yada yada hi dharma syarakmana bhavati bhavati abhitanama dharma syam tadatmanama srajamnaham. He's coming to restore dharma, but yet still it's sealed, as Krishna Das Kaviraj is saying here. Only a few people will surrender, will have that faith. Surida Bishvasapuri, as we're reading. We'll have this faith. We can talk about spiritual life as a development of faith. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu comes, he's Krishna, and he's Krishna in a very merciful mood. Why? Because he's taken on the mood of Srimati Radharani. So Radharani's mood is she wants to bring all the jivas to worship Krishna. In this world, we don't find that a person's consort is like that. You know, generally a man's wife doesn't say to her husband, my dear husband, why don't you get another 10 wives? But Radharani's mood is, of course she exhibits some jealousy in Leela, but her mood is, I want everybody to worship Krishna. I want everyone to serve Krishna. She's pushing the other devotees to worship Krishna. And of course, we even see this. There's one of the logical arguments against the existence of God, is if God is perfect, how can he be absolutely just and absolutely merciful? Because if you're absolutely just, then you always give everybody exactly what they deserve, right? Isn't that perfect justice? Completely perfect justice would mean everybody would get exactly what they deserve, no more and no less. But perfect mercy must mean that at least sometimes somebody gets less than what they deserve. Right? Doesn't that make sense? So how can anybody be perfectly just and perfectly merciful? This is one of the arguments against God. Oh, but they don't know our science of Radha and Krishna. So Krishna is perfectly just and Radharani is perfectly merciful. And this tendency is seen even in the male and female in this world, according to the empiric psychologists. That male idea of morality is more in terms of justice and female idea of morality is more in terms of mercy. So when Krishna takes on the mood of Radharani, although he's still completely just, he becomes absolutely merciful. And he takes on her mood of wanting to bring the jivas. Krishna in his original mood is more neutral. As you surrender to me, then I'll reward you. I'll reciprocate. You don't like me? Okay, well, I'll leave you alone. Right? We also have this tendency. Someone doesn't like us, I'll stay away from you. I'm not going to force myself where I'm not wanted. The prisoners, the ordinary prisoners, why should anybody try to reform them? They don't want to be reformed. That's why they're prisoners. Let them rot in jail. But yet there are social workers who go into the prison at personal risk. Sometimes they get killed even. To try to help them. No, come to a better life. So that's Radharani's mentality. Come, Krishna's so nice, Krishna's so nice. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was Krishna in that mood. Come. Soft-hearted. Therefore he doesn't say first you have to surrender. And you can think of like a soft-hearted woman. Soft-hearted means also a little sentimental. Oh, that's all right. You can come in anyway. Bad boy, but it's all right. Come back in. So that's the mood that he's taking. And of course, his associates, Lord Nityananda, Dvaitacharya, Giradhar, Srivas, they're also in that mood. Lord Balaram, right, when Rukmi's insulting him, he hits him on the head. When Maharshan Sutta doesn't acknowledge him walking into the assembly, he kills him with a blade of grass. When the residents of Hastinapur don't immediately turn over Sambha and Lakshmana, he starts to drag him into the Ganga, cause an earthquake. But as Lord Nityananda, he's banging on people's doors and saying, "Purchase me, purchase me, purchase me." And he's going to Jagai Mata and saying, "My dear brothers, please chant Hare Krishna." And they throw a pot at his head and he said, "Please chant Hare Krishna." Now Rukmi just insulted him and he killed him. My dear Jagai is trying to kill him. And he's asking Chaitanya, "No, no, no, don't hurt them." So they're also, all the associates of Lord Chaitanya are also in this mood. And they're breaking our resistance to surrender. They're saying, "See, this is how it's done. It's fun. Kevalanandakam. It's just joyful. Don't worry." I mean, Krishna's saying, "Masuchaha. Don't worry." I'm going, "No, I'm worried. You know, if I surrender, what about this? And what about this? And what about this? And what about this? What about this?" One of my students just sent me this video about deaf people. Really, really interesting. It's about people who have this particular disease, I think it's called Usher syndrome. And they're born deaf, and they gradually go blind. So by the time they're like 20, 25 years old, they're blind. Gradually, their vision narrows, 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 narrows. And so they first talk with sign language, and once they go blind, they have to communicate where they hold someone's hands as they're making the signs. So this person narrating this film, he was asking some of these people, "Would you like to have, if you could have one thing back, would you have your hearing or your sight?" And they said, "Well, I'd like my sight back. I wish I could see again." And he said, "Well, what about your hearing? Would you like to be able to hear?" And they kind of hesitate because they're born deaf. And they say, "Well, I don't know if I'd like to hear. A deaf person is my identity." And then they're interviewing all these other deaf people, and many of them are saying the same thing. They're saying, "We, that's who we are. I've always been deaf. If I could hear, I'd be a different person. I don't want to be a different person. I can do so many things. I can do anything that anybody else can do. Why say that I'm handicapped? I'm just fine. Leave me alone." And even they're asking some of these people, their child was born deaf and they can put this cochlear implant in, but they have to put it in the first 3 years. Otherwise the brain changes and it can't understand sounds as well. And they'll say, "Do you want to get this for your children?" And they'll say, "Well, no." Then they won't be part of our deaf culture anymore. They say like this. They say they can decide when they grow up. They said, "By then it will be too late. It won't work anymore." And that's exactly our position. We're thinking, you know, there's these descriptions of Prabhupada saying, you know, you have some little sense gratification here, as we were saying. The more you drink it, the more wonderful it is. Your happiness will always be increasing. And we hear about that, and still we're thinking, "No, no, let me stay as I am. I have my identity. I know who I am. I know what kind of person I am. I'm comfortable with that. I don't want to do anything else." So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his associates are showing, "No, here's something wonderful." And they're showing in a way to which we can relate. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his associates, they seem practically like us. Isn't it? And you read the Bhagavatam, and you're reading about people going to other planets, you know, creating an aerial city out of their mind. Like these Prachetas we're reading about who are meditating underwater for 10,000 years. Well, who of us can stay underwater for 10 minutes? We speak of 10,000 years. And then just from their eyes, they're burning the trees and the devas are talking to them. Anybody here talk to one of the devas lately? Some people. Generally. It's not part of our experience. We think, what does that have to do with me? But you read Chaitanya Charitamrita, it almost feels like you're reading about ISKCON, doesn't it? They're having their Rath Yatra festival. They're sitting down eating prasada. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is feeding everyone so much. He's feeding everyone as much as 10 people can eat. Sounds like ISKCON, at least in some parts of the world. And you think, yeah, I can do that. See how they're surrendering to Krishna and they're happy. So Krishna's coming and showing as if he himself is surrendering to Krishna, and just see how happy he is. See how wonderful he is. So this starts to break our resistance and increase our faith. And we think, yes, I do want that. Maybe I am willing to surrender to Krishna. Maybe I am willing to give up all of my designations without fear. So I wanted to look a little bit at two things, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's philosophy. And I thought I'll look at the philosophy first, because I thought once we start telling pastimes, it'll be very difficult to ever stop and get to the philosophy. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in his book, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Life and Precepts, which of course the Thakur wrote in English and sent to McGill University in Canada, the same year that Srila Prabhupada appeared on the planet. Prabhupada took that as a very auspicious omen. And, of course, indicative of the Thakur's desire to spread Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission all over the world. We should note that in this chapter of Adilila, it's mentioned that anybody can take to Krishna consciousness. It doesn't matter whether you're a gentleman or a rogue, even. As said, old people, you were asking me, am I too old? Old people, young people, Women, even children, even rogues, anybody can take up Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur was showing this externally by sending this book to McGill University. And he talks about 9 basic points of philosophy that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught. First of all, that there's one God. Okay, well, there's many religious systems that say there's one God. And this God has infinite power. This is also certainly not unique to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that he's an ocean of rasa. Now, generally, most religious, spiritual people don't understand that God is an ocean of rasa. They may talk about how God is love, but to really understand this, and the science of rasa that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained to Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami, there's no comparison anywhere in any religious philosophy in the world. So you read the Bhaktivinoda Sindhu, you read the Nectar Devotion, and the 5 aspects of rasa, and all the different types of udipans, and the different types of sai bhava, and the different kinds of anubhava, and sattvika bhava, and what are the different things that bring them out, and what are the different situations, and who has understood the science of love to that extent? And that Krishna is just an ocean of rasa. An ocean of various, rasa in Ayurveda means taste, an ocean of taste, an ocean of experience. This also breaks down our resistance to surrender to Krishna. Because otherwise we're thinking, on this, in my material condition, I have so many tastes. And then that the soul is part of God. So this is taught again in some religious systems, but not so clearly. Most religionists and spiritual philosophers think, instead of that I am a soul, they think that I have a soul, or they think that the soul was created at a particular time. They don't really understand what is this that I am really a part of, God. Then that there are some conditioned souls and some liberated souls. And particularly important in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's philosophy is this concept of achintya-bheda-bheda-tattva. And the reason this is so significant is that if you only take one or the other, you can't fully engage in Krishna's service. In Western philosophy, these are called immanence and transcendence. Immanence means kind of like pantheism. God is everywhere, like Krishna says in the 9th chapter, Maya Tatamidam Sarvam Jagadavyaktamutina Matsani Sabhabhutani Nataham Tesvabhaktitaha. And transcendence is God is separate. Am Sarvasya Prabhupada. So generally people think of one of the two. Either just God is totally separate, you have the world is evil, the world is controlled by some evil force and God's way up there, separate, or God's everywhere, there's no separate existence of God. Now if God's everywhere, how can I have a relationship with him if he's just everywhere and everything? He's everywhere, he's everything, I'm part of him. What do you do? What kind of actions can you do? Therefore, such people generally try to stop all actions, which is, of course, impossible, as Krishna says. You can't stop all actions. It's an impractical philosophy. To live that philosophy is almost impossible. In fact, you can't live at all. As soon as you're breathing, as soon as you're eating, as soon as you're walking, you're not living that philosophy. That philosophy is simply nothingness. And then the other idea, that God is only transcendent, well, then how do I do anything for him? Then that means this microphone, this body, this lectern, this floor have nothing to do with him. How can I use this marble in his service? The marble is evil. It's disconnected from him. It has no relationship. So again, you're stuck. You have no way of action. So the people with the idea that God is transcendent, they generally engage in materially pious works. They have a very hard time engaging in bhakti. So one has to understand both, that God has a separate existence and that he's everywhere. Everything is connected with him. Therefore, I can reconnect everything with him. The broken connection is just in my consciousness. Anyway, that's a long discussion. 3-minute summary of a long topic. Then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught that bhakti is the only means. Of course, Krishna is also teaching this. Bhakti mama vijananti yavanyas. But at the same time, Krishna is also teaching so many other things, isn't he? He's teaching karma yoga, he's teaching jnana yoga, he's teaching jnana yoga. And even though he's saying sarvadharma prachajani, even though he's saying bhakti mama vijananti, still, just like there's this one teacher who only translated up to the 6th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Just jnana yoga. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was teaching just bhakti. You don't find Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he's not teaching karma yoga, he's not teaching jnana yoga, he's not teaching jnana yoga, he's just teaching bhakti. And that the goal is prema, prema pumartha maha. So this Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was teaching very clearly, because many people think the goal is moksha. If you ask most people in most religions, what's your goal? They'll tell you either heaven or salvation. And heaven to them means usually swarga. So karma and jnana. Jnana is to see everything's false and I just become liberated. So most religious systems on the planet today are teaching karma and jnana. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was only teaching bhakti and only teaching prema. So anybody can remember the 9 things? Any of them? Before we go into Leela? Yes? Only one God. Okay, another one. Huh? Ocean of rasa. Good. Another one.
He is all powerful and all merciful.
All powerful and all merciful, yes. Another one. Yes, although the Thakur doesn't specifically say that, because if he's an ocean of rasa, he must be a person. It's implied. I can't be an ocean of rasa without being a person. Yes. Conditioned souls and liberated souls.
Bhakti is the process.
Prema is the ultimate goal. Two more.
All souls are part of God.
All souls are part of God. And? Chintaveda Vedanta. Very good. Okay. Now what's wants is a pastime. There's so many pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So I have some that I was thinking about talking about. I think I'll just go through 2-3 minutes of this whole manifest pastimes, and then maybe you guys could pick something you'd like to talk about. So of course Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared in Navadvipa, and he was first named Nima. He was born under a neem tree. And he was a very naughty boy. He was not a very well-behaved child. He was a great scholar. He ran his own school starting when he was 14. He was married to Lakshmi, who then when he went to East Bengal died in separation, and then on his mother's request, he married Vishnupriya. However, once he took initiation from Ishwarapuri, he started manifesting the attitude and behavior of a devotee. Before that, he had appeared to be inimical to the devotees, and he started in his school teaching just about Krishna. So we even have experience in this school that sometimes parents will take their children out because they say there's too much Krishna, right? Too much Krishna. And my friends, I've even seen, you know, initiated devotees in the Hare Krishna movement tell me there's too much Krishna in your school. He got some criticism from his students. Too much Krishna. Why are you just teaching Krishna? Right? And then one day, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was just chanting Gopi, Gopi, Gopi. And one of his students says, why are you chanting Gopi, Gopi, Gopi? You should chant Krishna. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Radharani's mood said, I'm not going to chant Krishna. What am I going to do with this Krishna? He's just a cheater and a rascal. Don't talk to me about Krishna. And he starts chasing the student with a stick. After which the students complained. Then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu decided he was going to take sannyas, which was very heart-rending for the devotees. Up until that time, he had started his Sankirtan movement there in Navadvipa. He was going to Srivasa's house every night and having all-night kirtans, and the devotees were preaching there in Bengal, and now he decides he's going to take sannyas. So then at the request of his mother, he wanted to go to Vrindavan, but at his mother's request, he went to Jagannath Puri. He said, look, mother, I can't stay here in Navadvipa. That's not so proper. She said, okay, go to Puri, it's not so far. So then he went to Jagannath Puri, and he had some wonderful lila with the chief pandit, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, who became one of his followers. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya tried to make the Lord one of his followers. Instead, he became a follower of the Lord. And then after, I think about 2 years, in Jagannath Puri, he went to South India, so he took this Sankirtan movement all through the subcontinent, at which point he was, of course, chanting, dancing, making so many devotees. Still, there's many places in South India where people are still chanting Hare Krishna because of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Then he came back to Puri. Then he said he wanted to go to Vrindavan, and the devotees kept, oh, wait till this, wait after this. There's this festival. Now it's the rainy season. Now after this festival. Finally, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, listen, I really want to go to Vrindavan. So he went with a large group of devotees and got to Bengal, met with Rupa and Sanatana Goswami for some time. Then he sent them back and he said, don't worry, Krishna will deliver you. And Rupa Goswami said, I don't think it's good to go to Vrindavan with such a big crowd. You should go alone. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu considered this. This is interesting, rasa, how the devotee is saying to the Lord, maybe you should do it this way. And the Lord said, yes, you're right. And so then he goes back to Jagannath Puri, and then he goes to Vrindavan again with just two persons. And then he comes back from Vrindavan and spends the rest of his manifest pastimes in Jagannath Puri. On his way back from Vrindavan, he converts the Mayavadi sannyasis and he meets again with Rupa and with Sanatana Goswamis, which is when he gives them their main instruction about bhakti, from which they then write books. And he sends them to Vrindavan. He goes back to Puri, and at his last years in Puri, he was manifesting a mood of deep ecstasy, which got deeper and deeper and more extraordinary. Of course, while Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was in Puri, the devotees from Bengal would come every year for the Rath Yatra, and they would stay for the 4 months of the rainy season, and there were many pastimes there. So any particular pastime anybody would like to talk about? That's a summary. 3 minutes only. Or should I can just tell what I have on my list, but if there's something that you'd really like to... Anybody have some favorite leela? Yes? Oh my. Yeah, well, Sanatana Goswami, he had an interesting way of getting out of his government service. He said he was sick and just stayed home studying the Bhagavatam. Because the Nawab really liked him, and he thought, I'll never get out until the Nawab doesn't like me anymore. I want to get him angry with me. So the Nawab got really angry with him, and he put him in jail. And then Sanatana Goswami bribed the jailkeeper. He flattered him and bribed him. And he left the jail, and then he was going on the back roads. He didn't want to be found. And going on the back roads, he didn't have much to eat. Often he was fasting. And at one point he drank bad water, which gave him a skin disease. So he had open sores all over his body. They were itching and they were oozing. I was just reading yesterday the story of Rikasura, where Sukadeva Goswami asked, why are the devotees of Lord Shiva, who is apparently poverty-stricken, opulent, and why are the devotees of Krishna, who's the most opulent, poverty-stricken? And Sukadeva Goswami responds to Maharaj Pariksit's question by saying that the opulence given by Lord Shiva is actually entangling and harmful for his devotees. It's not something that's beneficial for them. And that Krishna is going to do what's best for the living entity, which may include sometimes putting them into miserable conditions. And he says that the opulence of the devotee is not from good karma, and the misery of the devotee is not from bad karma. It's all perfectly engineered by Krishna. He said, especially if the devotee really wants to surrender but has some little desire, Krishna may take away all that devotee's sources of happiness. And of course, Prabhupada talks about this with regard to himself. And Prabhupada was speaking in Hawaii the day after Gaur Purnima about Lord Chaitanya. And Prabhupada brought this up. And one devotee said, can we ask Krishna to force us? Of course, Krishna ultimately cannot force. We have our free will. Prabhupada says, yes, you can request Krishna to put you in a situation where you have no shelter other than him. And he said, that actually happened to me. He said, my Guru Maharaj wanted me to take sannyas, and I didn't want to do it. I was resisting. I didn't want to give up my family. I didn't want to take sannyas. He said, so therefore he took away all of my opulence. He made my business fail. He said, at the time I was thinking, why is this happening to me? Maybe I've made some mistake that Krishna's punishing me like this. And then I remembered that this was Krishna's mercy to push me to follow the orders of my spiritual master. So Prabhupada also is writing in the story of Rikasura that when it's cold, to go to a place that's warm is very pleasing. After there's some suffering, the enjoyment is very pleasing. So in the same way, sometimes when the devotee goes through distress, the happiness of meeting Krishna is even more pleasing. And there's a wonderful section there where Prabhupada talks about that for those of us who come into this material world, when we again regain our spiritual position, it will be even more pleasing than it was when we left. We'll relish it even more. And then Prabhupada says that Krishna is greatly rewarding the tried devotee. So even for devotees like Sanatana Goswami, even for devotees like Srila Prabhupada, Krishna is sometimes reciprocating in this way. So Sanatana had these horrible sores, and he comes to Jagannath Puri. And he didn't want to, at one point Lord Chaitanya called for him to come. He said, Sanatana, please come. It was the middle of the day, and if you've been in India in the middle of the day, in the hot season, it's very hot. It's like 50 degrees. My daughter-in-law was telling me how she was in Vrindavan at that time when her mother was leaving her body. And she said when they'd walk on the asphalt road, their shoes would melt to the road. It was so hot. And Sanatana Goswami didn't have any shoes. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had called him. Now, he could have gone in front of the temple, but he was concerned that the pujaris go in and out of the temple. And when you're taking care of the deities, you can't touch anybody who's unclean. Or you have to take a bath and change all of your clothes again. And he thought, I have these oozing sores, and therefore I'm not clean. And suppose one of the pujaris just accidentally brushes against me, then I'll have disrupted their service. The devotee's always thinking, how can I facilitate other service? So he thought, okay, well, I'll go the long way around, which meant he had to go on the beach. And you know what it's like to walk on the beach when it's very hot, barefoot. But he was so absorbed, and I'm going to see Lord Chaitanya. He really just didn't notice. And actually, the great devotees, they don't even notice their material condition. So like an intoxicated person doesn't notice if they're clothed or not. So he comes to teach Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and Lord Chaitanya said, how did you come? I came on the beach. Why did you do that? Oh, I have this disease. I didn't want them to touch me. Well, it must have been very hot. And actually, the bottom of his feet were blistered. Of course, eventually, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was always embracing Sanatana Goswami, and Sanatana was very upset about this. He said, I'm offending the Lord. And then Jagannatha Pandit said, well, why don't you just go to Vrindavan? Which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu chastised him. Jagannatha Pandit said, Why are you advising your seniors? Anyway, Jagannatha Pandit also ended up going to Vrindavan. That's another way of the story. Maybe I could tell. And as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then one time embraced Sanatana Goswami, then all of those sorrows were gone. But even when the sorrows were there, Sanatana Goswami was saying, don't touch me. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would embrace him by force. And Lord Chaitanya said, no, just like the baby. Just like, you still there? Out there? Ujeshwari, Madhava? Hey, Ujeshwari, you still there? So how did you feel when Madhava spit up a little while ago? Did you hate him? No. Did you mind cleaning it up? Everyone else is offering obeisances, saying the Premajwani prayer, and you're cleaning up. Did you mind? No. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, just like the mother, the baby is even passing stool and urine, and the mother doesn't mind. He said she thinks of it like sandalwood pulp. I don't know if I ever thought of it quite like sandalwood pulp. It's part of love. It's part of love. Oh, I'm making my little baby clean. Of course, when they get a little older, it's a little different. At least when they're babies. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was saying like that. He said, I love you. And therefore, I don't mind, even if you get using stuff on my body. So sometimes also we hesitate to come close to Krishna because we're thinking that I'm very unworthy. We tend to vacillate. Either we think, yes, I'm very worthy. I chanted at least 16 rounds now for so many years. I always do this and I do this and I'm always reading Prabhupada's books and I'm strictly following and I've offered so many pieces of incense. Why aren't I Krishna conscious? As Prahladananda Swami was saying in his lecture in Mayapur this year, why hasn't Krishna surrendered to me yet? Come on, Krishna. So either we think like that, yes, I'm a very great devotee, I have so many things to my credit, or else we tend to think, oh, I'm so fallen, I have so many material desires. One of my grandkids said this to me. He said, Grandma, I can't become a pure devotee, I have too many material desires. We think, oh, I can't go close to Krishna. You know, C.S. Lewis talks about this. He says how, it's very interesting. He says that when someone first takes up spiritual life, they're very eager to do everything with full attention and with great care, and they don't want anybody to distract them or anything to distract them. They're so enthusiastic. But after a while, what sometimes happens is they start, well, not being so careful with this thing or that thing or the other thing. Some little, maybe big sin or big offense, maybe a small thing. But what happens if I've done something to offend you? Then I may not want to see you. I may feel kind of uncomfortable, right, being around you. If I know I've done something that's bothered you, isn't it? The Kunja gave me some prasadam the other day on a nice china plate, and I was bringing the plate back to her, and I dropped it. Broke. I'm sorry. I apologize to you. Broke all over my deck. And my first feeling is, I don't want to go and tell her. I don't want to tell her. Maybe she'll just forget that she gave me a plate. You know, it's hard to go to somebody when you know you've offended them. So as when we're conscious that we've offended Krishna, we actually start to want to keep a distance from him. I don't want to go too close to Krishna. And C.S. Lewis said, the tendency of the conditioned souls already is to want to stay away from God. And therefore, one becomes more and more and more relaxed in their practices. He say, whereas in the beginning, nobody can dissuade you from being attentive, now you're looking for any excuse to be inattentive. Let me try to say my prayers with as least attention as possible. Let me try to stay away from Krishna. Let me not get to, no, I don't want to think about Krishna. Let me just do my reading ritualistically, do my chanting ritualistically. I don't want to come close. So Sanatana Goswami is saying, no, I don't want to come close to you. I'm an offender. Stay away. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was forcibly embracing him. So even though we're offenders, it's still Krishna wants us in his present. He said it's not, he's not concerned like that. He's not trying to keep us away. So I could say one more thing. Should I stop right now? Or what should I do?
I'm going to find out.
Because you told me I should stop right at 8.
Seems like no one's come out yet, so.
Do you want to just check?
Yes.
Okay. So I'll talk a little bit more about Sanatan and Jagannatha. So after a while, of course, Sanatan Goswami does go to Vrindavan. And he's living there. And Jagannatha Pandi comes to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and says, "My dear Lord, I'd really like to go to Vrindavan." Actually, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also wanted him to go to Vrindavan because he gets so upset in Jagannath Puri. Every time Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wouldn't take his offers for sense gratification. You know, Jagannatha Pandi wanted to give Lord Chaitanya a bed of flowers. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "No, sannyasis can't sleep on a bed of flowers." And finally, I think it was Swarup Damodar. You're on time. Okay, I'll just finish this one. Take me one more minute. Is that all right?
Yeah.
Can I go one more minute?
Okay.
Okay. So finally, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "All right, it's disturbing you so much. I won't sleep on your flower bed. I won't take your oil. Why don't you go to Vrindavan and take a little break? You know, you don't have to see how austere I am." So, and he told him, he said, "Be careful, though. Don't associate too closely with the Brijvasis because they have a different mood." So he said, "Just hang out with Sanatan Goswami." So he stayed with Sanatan Goswami, who showed him all the holy places, and they had wonderful talks together. And Sanatan Goswami sent back some gifts. He sent back a Govardhan Shila, a Gunjamala, and some pilu fruits, a big bag of pilu fruits.
Which fruit?
Pilu. Pilu. Pilu is the tree, it's the pilu tree that produced pearls in the story of when Krishna planted the pearls. Do you know that story of Krishna planting the pearls? Krishna Chakravarti tells that story. Anyway, they grew on pilu trees. And right next to where Krishna Chakravarti Thakur and Raghunath Das Goswami had their bhajan kutir in Radhakund, there's a pilu tree right by the ghat where Radharani bathes every day at noon. And they say that that pilu tree told Leela to Krishna Chakravarti Thakur. And that's how he wrote some of his stories. Anyways, it brought back some pilu fruits, which I've never had. And Jagannatha Pandi comes back with these gifts, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, of course, takes the Shila and the Gunja berries, which he eventually gave to Raghunath Das Goswami. And with the pilu fruits, he distributed them to all the devotees. Now, some of the devotees were familiar with pilu fruits, so as they were eating them, they spit out the seeds. But the devotees from Bengal never had pilu fruits before, so they just were eating the whole thing. And the seeds in the pilu fruits are spicy, like cayenne pepper. So when they were eating the fruits, they went and all the devotees left. So this is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's very playful nature. So sometimes we're in a very happy condition eating tasty pilu fruits, and sometimes we're in a very difficult position eating spicy seeds. But if in our happy condition or a difficult condition, if we can bring a smile to the face of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then that is our great happiness. So now we're going to greet the Lord. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Without him, we would never know to take shelter at the feet of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Gaur Purnima Ki.